live video stream at WVMetroNews.com. Single and triple A games tomorrow. All three state championship games are scheduled for Saturday. In addition to the Mountaineer football program, transfer defensive back Wesley McCormick. He transfers from James Madison. 6 foot, 199 pounds, a fifth-year senior. Played just one game last year. He redshirted to preserve a season to play this year. Pirates beat the Dodgers 8-4, Boston over the Reds 7-1, and the New York Rangers beat Tampa Bay 6-2, game one of the NHL's Eastern Conference Finals. Morning news time is 8:20.
The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 580 WCHS, its employees, or WVRC Media.
Put the power of Peyton on your side. We have the courtroom experience that you need. We never give up. We're prepared to fight for your rights. When you need action, count on us. On your side, the power of Peyton.
It's 8:21 and this is 580 WCHS, the voice of Charleston. Thursday morning, Jeff Jenkins with you and Harvey Peyton of the Peyton Law Firm in Nitro. This is his show every Thursday morning here on 580 WCHS, the voice of Charleston. And Harvey loves to take calls, and the number to call is 304-345-5858, anything about the law, Harvey is here to talk about that. Harvey, good morning to you.
Well, good morning, Jeff. And, you know, taking calls is a great thing. I do love to do it. We'd love to do it at our office in Nitro. My son Tom and I practice here in the Peyton Law Firm. And, you know, the difference between what we do, I think, and what our brethren, perhaps on the other side of the legal equation, bigger firm lawyers, corporate practitioners, attorneys that represent insurance companies and banks on an hourly basis, is they generally know what is on the other end of the line when they get a call. And in our office, you never know. I use the analogy, and I've told younger lawyers this, look, there used to be a fishing lake down behind the Valley Drive-In Theater, which is no longer there in St. Albans. It's now the 84 Lumber. But there was the Valley Fishing Lake. And you could go and take a pole, or more than one, but you paid $2 for every pole you took into the fishing lake. And there it was. And you could fish all day and keep the fish you caught. And you're pretty sure, well, I'm going to catch something today because they put them in here. And they're all about the same size. You know, they're like 8, 10, 12 inches long, they're catfish, or there's a few bass. In the wintertime, maybe a trout or two. But you knew, low risk, moderate reward, or you could get on your bike or just walk and hike out to the lower falls of Coal River and seine out some minnows and go to a deep place off the end of the falls and throw in, and you never know what you're going to get. You may not get anything on any day, but on any given day, you may get the whopper of all time. So We're like the Lower Falls fishermen, as opposed to the fishing lake, the paid fishing lake fishermen. And yeah, I mean, it's a great way to interact with clients on the telephone. At our office, we like to initiate contact if you can by going through the website, PeytonLawFirm.com, where you can send an email that only Tom or I see. Now, because we can look at that any hour of the day or night, and in the subject, the body of the email form, it says, how would you wish to be contacted? It's email, telephone, or both. Well, if someone gives us their phone number, then usually what we'll do is look at the question or the statement and by email elicit some general information. If it's a question about some transaction, well, what county? Where? I mean, you can look at, we ask people to provide their email but or their zip code, but often maybe they're saying, my brother is, or my father-in-law did. So, well, okay, this is your zip code, but where is it? Jefferson County is out of our geographic footprint for most things. I tried a case once in Morgan County, but that was a case that originated in Mason County and went to Morgan County on a change of venue because of the overwhelming community sentiment in Mason County against my client. So if you call the office, if we're there and available, either Tom or I will try and take your call. If not, someone will get your number. We try and return every call every day. Some days that's just impossible, but we'll do our very best. And emails, certainly we'll do our very best to respond meaningfully within a day. As I was telling you before we get on the air, I've got to go to the office this afternoon and get on the phone with a couple of clients and apologize for being late and getting their work done. I mean, it's just one of those things where we had a, you hit a perfect storm sometimes. And, you know, we had a terrible thing happen in Nitro where Andre Heichel, who had owned and proprietated the Nitro supermarket, an essential part of life in the old part of town, just tragically died at work. And so that's consumed a lot of, I've represented the Heichel Andre. I mean, he was my neighbor in business for years. I had an office next to his store, and then I moved up the street since about 1977. So, you know, the matter of them opening a state, trying to wrap up some transfer of management of the store, making sure that we had a store that stayed in town, that was pretty much all-consuming for several weeks. But that's I'm happy to say that transition has taken place in the Nitro supermarket, at least as an entity, at the location where it is going to continue, depending upon the success of the new management and ownership. And that's a good thing for Nitro. You know, community grocery stores are hard to find. We, at one time in Nitro, there was an A&P store, which is up next to where Larry Dawson is now. There was a Foodland down on Main Avenue. There was a Kroger's on 21st Street, and there was also what at that time was Doyle's Market, which is where the Nitro supermarket is. And, you know, it's just like where you grew up the river, where I grew up on the west side of St. Albans. Clyde Delaney had a little grocery store, snack shop. There was the Dixie Grocery at the corner. There was a little first real convenience store that came in. Was a 7-Eleven there where you turn up Coal River Road. They're just all gone now.
Yeah, we had at the mouth of Pink Creek Dames Market.
Yeah.
And then just up the road about a mile in Pratt, Miller's Grocery.
Yeah, we had a Miller Grocery in St. Albans as well. Charlie Miller. I remember they were the last place that I saw fresh chickens being sold in St. Albans. They would just kill them, hang them up, you know, pluck them and kill them and hang them up there in the store and down on B Street. Yeah, I had Kroger's has been around forever. I can remember when the Kroger store in St. Albans was at the lower end of Main Street where Old Main Plaza is now. And there was a phone outside. And so when you went out of the store, I would go with my grandmother. You picked up that phone and rang in to get this, the St. Albans Taxi Service. Pete Barnett just picked up the phone and said, Miss Payton, we'd like to get a taxi up to the top of the hill. And so the next thing you know, a taxi would show up, and we'd get in, and they'd ride us up to my grandmother's house. They knew where that was. And then they moved down to where the McClung and Morgan is now. It's now the Rite Aid. And then over to... you know, the look. I think the Kroger store is about 30 years. It's been in the old St. Albans Mall location.
Let me work off that just a second. Harvey Payton's with us, Payton Law Firm in Nitro, 304-345-5858, 304-345-5858. You won't talk about this a lot yourself, but I know you and I see, you know, what you guys do. You've always invested in the community. I mean, you know, you could have opened your law firm and not done anything in the community, but that's just not what.
Well, that's not hardly right. You know, you can, it's just like these lawyers that come in here from Florida or Georgia or wherever, run these ads to try and lure people into just taking whatever the cream of the crop is in business. But they don't put anything back in the community. And how can you look people in the face? Like, this morning I heard where, like, the West Side Fire Department, a tornado fire. Well, the West Side Fire Department, I've supported them forever and ever. I mean, they're right down the street from our house, and it's the only fire protection we had on the west side of St. Albans. How can you not? How can you not help people at, like, the baseball field at Nitro, or wait for the room, or try to keep a store open, or in Putnam County, keep the hospital open? Think about that. That hospital was going to shut down. And we jumped in along with some other concerned citizens, brought a lawsuit, and stalled it enough for CAMC to buy it out. Now, you know, medical services are a huge part of your community. I'm not one of them, but I can tell you that there are, in any community, you can look and see probably a couple of dozen men and women who don't seek a lot of accolades who have been valuable in the development of how a community is shaped. You could, I'm sure if you sat here and thought about it, you might think of Burl Holbrook, for instance, who was a magistrate, sort of a community leader up Cabin Creek. Well, Tackett, General Tackett, he's from mm-hmm. Cabin Creek. Rabbit Stone was from over on the Cedar Grove area. I mean, those are the politicians that I know that, I mean, I had a cousin, Clay Holdren. His nickname was Rugged. He mined coal for Carbon Fuels for decades. He was on the city council at Chesapeake when they helped him get the community center. They got the school given to him. And, yeah, I mean, God just gives you the money not to spend on stupid stuff. I mean, I spend a lot of money on stupid stuff. But if you're lucky enough to be in a place, and let me tell you, it's a lot of it's blind luck, and you get that money, that's what it's for, to help people, right? So we try to do that.
Yeah. Well, you do a great job of it, and I know the community is thankful. Let's go to the line.
Okay, good.
Bill is on the line with Harvey Payton. Bill, go ahead.
Hello, Bill.
Good morning, Harvey. I have a question for you. In the most recent Republican primary election, we had a candidate who was removed from the ballot because she failed to meet the constitutional requirements for the office.
Correct.
That she was seeking. And my question is, when she filled out whatever paperwork she has to fill out, or any candidate has to fill out to run or to seek office, is there any place where they swear or affirm that they meet the requirements for that office, or is it up to, as in this case, a private citizen to do that investigation and take action to remove them from the ballot?
Well, as I understand it right now, and I've seen some certificates of candidacy because I was involved in an election contest once that was actually decided upon the issue of the eligibility of a candidate. And no, there is no attestation under oath. It's not necessarily false swearing. It's a representation by actually completing the certificate of candidacy that you meet the requirements. But there are not specific questions on that document. Now, there should be. And I suspect after this debacle, really, it's unfortunate for this young woman. She sounds as if she is a person who has a lot to contribute, but who was, you know, politicians are like Hollywood producers. They'll pee in your pocket and tell you it's raining, right? So anything to get what they want. But no, there isn't. And so there really isn't any case here, criminal case to be made, or I think any civil case could be made against this young woman for false swearing and making false representations, just a general allegation. And her answer would be, well, I thought I was eligible because people who were supposedly in the know, a serving state senator and a political operative that's been around here for 25 or 30 years, told me so. Well, I suspect that's true. Yeah. So, no. I mean, a short answer to your question is no, there's not. But there should be, and I suspect there will be, after this election cycle ends.
Okay, Bill, anything else?
No, thanks.
Okay,
Harvey,
thanks a lot. That. Thanks a lot, Bill. It's 8:33 on 580 WCHS, Voice of Charleston. Some legal news of the day I want to talk to Harvey about in a moment, but the lines are open for your calls. 304-345-5858, 304-345-5858. Back in a moment on 580 WCHS.
I never thought it would happen to me.
I never thought this could happen to me.
And then
it did.
It did.
It did. It did. We need a response unit to Shepherd and Fifth Ward.
We live life as though these types of life-altering incidents will never happen to us. Until they do.
Peyton Law Firm, handling injury and wrongful death claims arising from any type of accident. Fighting for your life, your compensation, and ultimately, your peace of mind. PeytonLawFirm.com.
If you plan on selling your car yourself, here are some helpful tips. Prepare to have weirdos come to your door.
I'm a weirdo.
Expect ridiculous offers.
Trade you my bicycle?
As well as issues collecting payment.
I'll write you 50 post-dated checks, okay?
Or bring your car to us.
Get cash today. Larry Dawson Auto Sales in Nitro wants to buy your car. Let us appraise it and give you top dollar on the spot. Convenient, fast, guaranteed cash. Online at LarryDawsons.com.
Hey, this is Dave Allen for your local Parmar store saying happy summer.
Summer's the busiest time of the year with ball games, reunions, vacations, picnics, barbecues. Hey, you name it, and it happens during the summer. Well, before you make plans to head out, make plans to visit your local Parmar store. From gas to great food and all the snacks you need, you'll find it at Parmar. We're nearly 200 stores strong, and we're adding stores all the time, all to better serve you. Download the Parmar app and sign up for our rewards card to save even more. Happy summer, and remember, there's not a Parmar store near you now. There will be soon.
Put the power of Peyton on your side. We have the courtroom experience that you need. We never give up. We're prepared to fight for your rights. When you need action, count on us. Put the power of Peyton on your side.
836 on 580 WCHS, the voice of Charleston. Harvey Payton with the Payton Law Firm is with us. And give us a call like Bill did, 304-345-5858, 304-345-5850. I wanted to talk to Harvey about the Joshua Phillips case that's getting started today with jury selection, charged in the death of police officer Cassie Johnson, and a big pretrial hearing earlier this week. So they're basically, they got 100, and they've whittled this big net that they cast out for potential jurors down to 110. They're bringing in 30 this morning, 30 this afternoon. We'll do basically the same numbers tomorrow to try to get 24 to strike from and try to get like a 12-member jury and two alternates.
Right. I think that would be an appropriate ratio if that can be accomplished. Obviously, this is a high-profile homicide. You compare this homicide prosecution with one that's going to be resolved today in Putnam County when Judge Stowers sentences an individual for killing a person, third party, in one in Campbell County, one in Putnam, mm-hmm. separate prosecutions, very little's noticed. I mean, it's like the remember Ray Black, who was the great legal talking head of the aughts. He represented William Kennedy Smith in his rape charge, and his wife was a circuit judge in Boca, in Palm Beach County. And he said, you know, the tragic thing was my wife would call him and say, yeah, we had a hearing today on William Kennedy Smith just to set a hearing date, and the courtroom's packed, and they all left, and 40 minutes later I sentenced a man to death for killing three people in a hotel. Nobody was there. I mean, there's just a difference in a high-profile case. And you know, it's accepted that there may be some difficulty, more than usual, in getting an objective jury of his peers. A man has a right to be tried by a jury of his peers. He has a right to a fair trial under the Constitution. He has a right to a public trial. And he has a right to be present and participate in every essential element and stage of his prosecution, which includes selection of the people who are going to pass on his guilt and determine his fate through the bifurcated process of mercy or no mercy, or first-degree murder or second-degree murder, whatever. Now, to do that, the court is duty-bound to find that he gets a jury that is selected from a community that is not so overwhelmingly adverse to this individual as a community at large that he cannot get a fair trial in Kanawha County. So it's a blend of individual and collective considerations. You could, I suspect, if you went through 1,000 people, you could find 24 who legitimately, and in answering voir dire questions to the lawyers, honestly, would be free from exception to try this man. But then can he get a fair trial in a community where the right to an open trial is not just for the defendant, it's for the public as well, for people to be in the courtroom where community opprobrium may be such, if 96% of the jurors called were unqualified because they felt some degree of animosity, the fact that you could winnow that down from 1,000 to 24, does that give them a fair trial? I wouldn't think so. I think that that's just my opinion, and everybody has their own. But if Judge Bailey goes through 90 jurors or 120 jurors in 2 days, and you're at the point where you've got two or three jurors and you've got responses from others that's overwhelmingly negative, towards this defendant. That fairly well expresses the sentiment of the community. Mm-hmm. I would be surprised. She might try another round. But if that ratio holds the same, it would be surprising to me if she would continue to have the trial here. It's a really, it's an important thing. You know, public trials are really important. The defendant has the right to have their trial open to the public because they have a right to be protected by all the eyes that can see the court. It's just what we saw, like on comments on Metro News when you had anonymity. They were vile, hateful, sometimes violent. So then you say, okay, you cannot comment now unless we can see who you are. Mm-hmm. The temperature goes down. Less Fahrenheit when you have to put your name on something. The same way a judge may be disposed or predisposed against a particular defendant to ramrod him, to railroad him. It happens. Prosecutor may be disposed to pull annex in the courtroom, or a defense lawyer to deploy tactics that are reprehensible. Well, if you're in a closed room, nobody's around. You can call a policeman, they can say anything they want to, nobody's going to object. But if you get reporters sitting there, or there are members of the community and family and friends and just general good people that come in and sit and watch, you're less likely to get a kangaroo court. And by the same token, if you've got from the public standpoint, the people of Kanawha County have a right to know that the justice is being administered fairly and equally to this individual, so that if he's tried in a public setting with all eyes upon it and a jury returns a verdict of not guilty, they can be satisfied, not happy, but could be satisfied that, well, justice was done, the system worked, and let's move on.
I thought that... And again, lines are open with Harvey, 304-345-5858. Ronnie Sheets, who's a public defender here, one of Phillips's attorneys,
yeah,
thought she made a pretty compelling argument to the judge in the hearing that I was at earlier this week when she said that, you know, from the questionnaires we did, the surveys we did, there are so many people that have seemed to form opinions on things about Cassie Johnson or even about her client, Joshua Phillips, that on even part of the trial, that she loved animals, that she, worked for, volunteered at the Humane Association, those type of things. And she said, so their opinions have been formed on things about her and about him, his previous criminal record. She said things have been reported on, is what she was saying, that really aren't even won't even be part of the case.
Right. So you can cast it as subliminally, a juror might cast this as a contest between good and evil. The angels on one shoulder or the devil on the other. Who are you going to listen to? Now, no matter what jurors say, I can tell you, I believe in my heart, that in any trial, any case, any criminal case, absent extraordinary circumstances, there is a propensity of jurors to believe what policemen say, unless it's just completely extraordinary or outrageous. So that's always going to be there. But there's a big jump from that to just believing that the defendant is evil, that the victim was good, particularly in this case where the man says he's going to rely on the defense of self-defense. Well, self-defense involves sort of an assessment of the circumstances as they existed at a particular moment in time in the minds of two people, the decedent. Was there some intent there, less than benevolent? And on the part of the accused, was there simply a desire to protect themselves from undeserved serious injury or death, or was there some formation of a black and evil heart to malice that would support first-degree murder? It's all important. Jurors can sort that out. Jurors can sort that out. Whether there are enough jurors in this panel to demonstrate to the judge that there is not overwhelming community sentiment against this man, to me that's the question. I don't doubt that if you got 1,000 people and you came up with 24, that you would have 24 people who could give this man a fair trial. But there's too much doubt there given the community sentiment, community opprobrium, to do that. I think a federal court on a habeas if it came to that, would say, no, no, you can't winnow through an entire populace to find a select few when it clearly demonstrates that there's overwhelming ill feeling towards this particular defendant. We'll see. I mean, we'll know in a couple of days.
Yeah.
We'll know by this time. By the end of the day tomorrow, yeah. I would think. Then don't be surprised to get a jury, right? I mean, we had a great judge down in Putnam County, James O. Holliday, and I had a pretty high visibility case. I made a motion to change the venue. I'll give you a hearing, Harvey. So what we'll do, we'll call the panel in and we'll have individual voir dire in chambers. He said, but you're going to be surprised. He said, you read the newspapers. You watch the news. He said, so do I. He said, probably 75% of those people sitting out in the courtroom, they're only news gathering is what's on at 5 minutes at the top of the hour as they're driving to and from work listening to music. And that's just, and he was right, as he so often was. We went through about 40 jurors, got 20. It wasn't a murder case. It was struck a jury, and 3 days later, my guy was convicted and sentenced to prison.
Yeah.
But he got a fair trial.
Well, since you and I've talked too, and Harvey's with us, 304-345-5858, Harvey Payton of the Payton Law Firm in Nitro, 304-345-5858. The big state opioid case settled.
Yeah, it got settled.
Got all the testimony in, and then it settled.
Well, that so often happens. They were talking all the time. I mean, cases, not so much now that we have almost mandatory mediation in civil cases. But in a lot of big cases, civil cases, that involve a lot of money, everybody wants to look at the lay of the land before they open their pocketbook. So the fact that it was settled in the middle of the judges, well, when the evidence was in, the judge hadn't started deliberating. I'm sure he said, look, you folks.
I think he was urging them.
Right. If you think there's time to talk, the time to talk is right now. I'm not telling you what I'm going to rule, but, you know, if you boys want to. Boys and girls want to get something resolved, do it now. Judges have a way of doing that. Well, Swope, wasn't it?
Yeah, Swope, yeah.
Yeah, he's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
And I wasn't clear reading the account. Does the $161 million total settlement include the $99 million that was paid by the first defendant?
No.
It didn't?
No.
So it's a total settlement against the three defendants who started the trial.
Yeah.
It's a total settlement of $250 million.
Yeah, and 27 of that is Narcan, like giving Narcan to the state.
Okay.
That's appropriate.
That would be an appropriate form of relief.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you get the money, then you have to distribute it to some agency who has to then go buy it. And
yeah.
I mean, that there's transactional costs involved, so just getting it. It seemed to me to be reasonable. I think the state did a good job. And there are some who would say, well, it should have been billions.
And they also worked a little deal in there that says if there's a national settlement, that the state not going to get less than there's a percentage, maybe 2.5% or whatever it was. So you can't – like there's a national settlement that kind of overrules them. You can't
– Right. You can't just say, well, okay, you got X number of dollars in your state settlement, so you don't get to participate on a national basis.
Yeah.
Was it Ness Motley that was representing the state in this deal from South Carolina?
Not sure.
I think.
Yeah.
They're a big mass litigation firm. I'm not sure. I mean, most of the case that was tried here in West Virginia, we're still waiting for a ruling. Now, Paul Farrell from Huntington was the lead counsel. I'm sure there was some national counsel involved. I don't know who it was. Attorney General Morrissey made a couple of appearances in the trial in Kanawha County, but he wasn't there every day. I mean, some people sort of sneer at that. Well, he just went down for the opening and publicity. Well, yeah, but he's the elected Attorney General of the state of West Virginia. He hired the best lawyers that they could find, and his job was to make an appearance to let people know that the state's a party, and then he's got other business to do. So I didn't think anything bad about that. I mean, if you're a politician and you're in office, when something good happens, you get credit for it, right? Whether you're responsible for it or not, you get credit. Conversely, if you're a politician in your office and something bad happens, whether you're responsible for that bad or not, you get the blame.
And so then now attention kind of turns to Judge Faber. It's been a long time. I mean, you start thinking, about, all right, he's taking so long. This is the federal trial, the Huntington trial, the Cabell County trial that they brought against the distributors. Does that mean, I don't try to conjecture here, but does that mean the award won't be as big as maybe, you know what I'm saying? Is it a time?
Yeah, I mean, it's.
Who does it favor these going
Well, it's just so hard to predict. I mean, one person is almost completely unpredictable. A collective group of six on a civil jury or 12 on a criminal case are more predictable, but still, I mean, there are trends. In a civil case, I would say, well, liability's been decided and they're arguing about the money. So one side it's a lot, the other side it's not so much, and you know, somebody's holding out on one issue, but they'll get this worked out in the long term. But as opposed to conflicting opinions between six individuals, in this case, we've got Judge Favor, and it may be conflicting intellectual concepts that are going through his mind about how to resolve this issue. To me, the biggest issue that he has, and I'm not speaking for Dave Favor, he's certainly a lot smarter. I mean, he's been appointed and confirmed by a president, confirmed by the Senate as a U.S. District Court judge, so that's enough for me. But how do you treat or consider damages for a person if the flood of opioid prescription drugs stopped in the late aughts or early teens? How do you compensate a community, a city or a county, for the treatment and problems and the costs associated with someone who became addicted in 2019 and who's 17 years old at the time? I mean, I don't. It's almost like reparations as opposed to damages. I think that's just a difficult concept, and maybe that's what he's arguing against.
Okay. Let's go to Bill on the line with Harvey. Bill, go ahead.
Morning, Bill.
Good morning, Harvey. Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, Bill.
Would either one of you guys be able to help me understand something? Why would you paint half of a bridge?
What, in Montgomery? You're talking about the Montgomery Bridge?
Yeah, yeah.
I was just over that bridge on Monday. I'm not sure what's going on up there, quite honestly.
I mean, the bridge that comes from right downtown in Montgomery across.
Yeah, over to Smithers.
Over to Smithers.
Yeah.
I haven't been, to be honest with you, Bill, I haven't. Well, my wife.
I mean, is the state in such financial trouble at this point that we can't afford to paint an entire bridge?
Well, I think what's missing here is what does the state say? Right.
Yeah, that's the question. I haven't seen it. I wasn't aware of the bicromial nature of the bridge. I did hear something, Bill, the other day that I found remarkable, if it's true. And it would be up to the governor or to Jimmy Riston to tell us. Is, you know, when the Department of Highway sends a patching crew to go mill out squares of blacktop and they fill those to patch potholes, if they cover a mile, that goes down as a mile of paving, as opposed to a mile of pothole patching. Now, I'm not sure if that's true. I find it hard to believe, but someone in the industry that told me that. So, you know, I don't know what we're going to do about these roads. I drive every day past a project that's incredible in its efficiency, and that's the new bridge down in Nitro. But at the same time, I drive through Kanawha City once or twice a week. The McCorkle Avenue in Kanawha City is disgraceful. If I drive down Route 62 from Winfield to Buffalo and on to Point Pleasant, where Nucor Steel is going to be, there's almost no road left. I don't know what the rhyme or reason is to this administration's road work. I'm not sure they do. But
hey, take a trip back down Washington Street whenever you go to Nitro.
Okay,
I'll do that. You know, the capital city of the state, and they talk about other companies coming in here and establishing a business. Once you see this stuff, I think I'd turn around and go in the other direction. I mean, there's nothing there that's appealing.
Well, yeah, Bill, that's one of the...
Thanks for the call, Bill.
One of the points about a wide-ranging and well-thought-out policy on roads, I think, I analogize it to, if you go look at a house, you're thinking about buying a house, well, you look at one house, maybe it's not ideal for your purposes, but the lawn's trimmed and the driveway has no cracks in it or it's been freshly paved. You go look at another house, think, you know, this is a little closer to where I want to be. It's a better location, but I don't know. You know, the grass is high, which indicates a lack of maintenance overall. The driveway's cracked. I mean, I'm going to have to take this thing at face value and then worry about footing the bill to repair it. I mean, to me, that's a major consideration. Hoppy pointed out a major consideration this morning about workforce. So we're in a perfect storm here.
Yeah.
So that's not a call, is it?
No. Let me ask you something else, Harvey, and just a couple minutes left. And I, the defamation suit. Between Depp and
Byrne or whatever.
Yeah, right.
I'll have to admit, I have deliberately paid utterly no attention to that. It was cast as a blockbuster story last night on NBC Nightly News. We have got a war in Ukraine that's causing worldwide shortages of food and fuel. We've got the wife of a United States Supreme Court Associate Justice who's emailing people in the White House about storming the Capitol. I mean, we've got children, 19 children dead in Texas, and two teachers, and now four people in a hospital, and we're reporting about Johnny Depp. I don't care. And I wish that Joe Biden would get up on his platform and say, look, folks, we got to stop caring about things like this. It makes no difference. Johnny Depp is just a guy. He's fought abuse problems all of his life. He's got a violent temper. His wife is obviously Hollywood spoiled. They got into a spat between each other because the Washington Post was dumb enough to print an op-ed that she wrote. I think because somebody on the thought it would be a step forward for women. Well, how did that work out, right? So, it just makes my head hurt.
Yeah,
to think about it.
I listened to the jury to the verdict being read yesterday, and it was like, oh man, it's just
$15 million.
Yeah,
$15 million to what? Jack the Pirate or the Pirate of the Caribbean for what? I mean, his lawyer's going to make some cash if they ever collect it. She can probably file bankruptcy, and unless a lot of it's punitive damages. But I mean, it's just
okay.
If you want to talk about things that are serious and meaningful. Call the Peyton Law Firm. We don't do a lot of TV advertising. We got some billboards. We talk on the radio. But our best advertising is the fact that we do really good work on a really personal basis with the people and families we represent. So if it's an injury to your person, a financial injury, a problem with a bank or an insurance company or an untimely death, I can't tell you who to hire. But if you would call the Peyton Law Firm or send us an email, we got a lot of experience backing us up, and we got Tom Peyton, who's the best lawyer in this whole area under the age of 50, period. Give us a call.
Okay, all right.
And come by the office, First Avenue. It's a beautiful place. You've seen it.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, you've been back for a while. Did you see where the Deal family took a loss down in Putnam County? The same people, sort of like one of the Deal girls that owns the Dairy Queen and Nitro.
Right.
And it's Jeff Deal.
We were on that story. Yeah.
Oh man, it was horrible. Yeah. I mean, they've had their dining room closed,
right?
Because
they were getting ready to open. They were going to open it that day. They had talked
right,
about.
But the weather was bad. I'm telling you, that guy. I don't know what's wrong with him, but they had been open. Even in the afternoon, there would have been two. That's a really popular dairy thing. They've been in business, I know, for 16 years.
Okay, Harvey, good seeing
you.
Hey,
hope to see you next week.
Okay, all right, that sounds good. Stay tuned. ABC News is next, and then after that, Carrie Hudasek with local news. Dave Allen with 580 Live on 580 WCHS, the voice of Charleston.
580 WCHS AM, 96.5 FM Charleston, and 104.5 Cross Lane, a WVRC media station. We're proud to live here too.